Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Enthusiasm and enunciation, check. Sit up straight, check. Large coffee, check. We ready? We're on. Oh, I guess we're on already. Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Early Morning Late Show. Today is Thursday, and it is October 19th. So glad you're with us today. I want to start with a verse that I just love from Psalm 37. It says, "Take delight in the Lord, and He will give you the desires of your heart." Take delight in the Lord, and He will give you the desires of your heart. Go ask for His will today, and those will be the desires of your heart. Focus on Him. Give Him glory. Spend some time with Him this morning in prayer and in scripture memorization. If you're not doing that, I encourage you to do that. Find a verse that you can start on today. And let me know what it is. And then when you're finished with it and you know it by heart, you can mark that day as another day of growing closer to the Lord through His Word. Today is the 30th anniversary, this week anyway, the 30th anniversary of the stock market crash of 87. The Dow fell more than 500 points on October 19th, 1987. Since then, the Securities and Exchange Commission has ordered so-called circuit breakers that stop trading when there are huge drops in the Dow or the S&P 500. I think it was in 1987 I took my money and I put it into mayonnaise jars and then put it under my bed. Can't say my investment portfolio has grown much, but there you go. All right, we've got a great show this morning. Bill English from BibleandBusiness.com. He's in his home office today, just finished eating his breakfast covered with gravy, and we're going to bring him on and talk about what we were going to talk about with him yesterday. So it is 6 minutes after the hour. We'll be back with more in just a minute. Good morning. It's 7 minutes after the hour. We're going to have a beautiful day here in the upper Midwest. I cannot wait to get out, feel a little of that sunshine on my pasty white face. But the weather is going to help the firefighters in Northern California today. Today's the first rain of the season is forecasted, so that should be good because of the fires out there. I feel horrible for the people there. We need to keep them in our prayers. And anyway, but let's, in the upper Midwest, enjoy our fall weather today. I have on our studio line Bill English. He's usually in studio on Wednesdays, but he was a little under the weather yesterday. So we thought, well, we'll have him on today. Good morning, Bill.
Hey, good morning, Bill and Rebecca and Paul. How are you guys this morning?
Everyone's well. Everyone's good. Everyone's waving right now. So how are you feeling today?
You know, I'm feeling better, so thanks for asking. It was not a good night. Tuesday night was not a good night.
I'm sorry. You shouldn't have eaten that fruitcake from Christmas 2014.
No, I shouldn't have. I should have taken the one from 2012.
Because, you know, that's around. That's still around, too, just so you know.
Oh, okay.
All right, let's talk about an article you wrote for BibleandBusiness.com on power and narcissism. Boy, those two are peas in the same pot, aren't they?
They really are, and it's really sad when owners and leaders start to listen to their own press and start to believe that they're the fulfillment of their own mission and empower and narcissism take over in their lives. It's not a good thing.
Yeah. It seems that Hollywood, you look at the number, it's built on a scarcity business. I mean, 90% of actors are not going to work. So there's going to be different levels of desperation to be in that business, and that sets up a perfect relationship between predator and victim.
Yeah, it really does. When you have somebody or a small group with a lot of power and money who also employ a much larger group of people who are desperate for that kind of work, it sets up all sorts of uninteresting possibilities around abuse and around what they can do to other people to satisfy their own narcissistic needs. It's just, it's not a good combination.
And Bill, now power is, it's power is power. So if you have it, whether you're in Hollywood or you're in a local church and you feel like you're a little puffed up on pride maybe because of how successful the church is, you can run into the same kinds of vulnerabilities, can't you?
Yeah, it is amazing, Bill, how many ministry leaders, whether they're in parachurch or in churches, how many of those ministry leaders have power issues when it comes to their role within the ministry. And I think this is in part because we have adopted an American CEO, American management type of way of running the church, rather than what I think is a more biblical way, which is to have the elders run the church, and then if they need certain ministries covered on a full-time basis, then they hire that out. But I'm not sure that the scriptures endorse this American CEO, senior pastor model of managing a church.
Mm-hmm. Is there an accountability problem in churches, do you think, with leaders? Because when churches get big and popular and leaders have a celebrity status because of their preaching style, nobody wants to mess with that. So who gets in their face and says, I'm not sure we're headed in the right direction with this?
Well, who wants to be the person that angers 3,000 or 4,000 people in the pews by saying that this gifted communicator is really not the right person to lead this church because of their antics and the peccadilloes behind closed doors?
Well, I always say I always say that the role of the dissenter in any group is very critical, and they need to be embraced and welcomed. I mean, you can't look at them as, you know, someone who's super negative. You have to look at them as they're dissenting for a reason. We need to listen.
If their heart's in the right place, I agree. Some of them are just not the right people to be listening to. But elder boards would do themselves well if they don't get criticism to seek out those who can offer contrary viewpoints.
Mm-hmm.
But this power thing, Bill, I'll tell you, this power thing in large churches is a very, very real problem. The vast majority of pastors who pastor churches, I'm going to say 4,000 or 5,000 and up, the vast majority of them are they are gifted communicators. They're highly talented people, but you get them behind closed doors and they can be meaner than a junkyard dog. And it's a real problem that most elder boards don't deal with.
Yeah. Well, I go back to It's a Wonderful Life when young George Bailey said to Mr. Gowers, but that's rat poison you're putting in. Remember that scene in that movie?
Yes, I do actually, and it was a fine scene, Bill. Wonderful, and very illustrative of what we're doing here.
I mean,
Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I mean, he was just playing the role of the dissenter, and thank goodness he did.
Yeah, I'm glad that he did. Well, the Harvey Weinstein piece is illustrative of what's been going on almost since the beginning of time. You go back into the Bible, rich men who have a lot of power abusing and taking advantage of the sexual favors of women who don't have the power.
Mm-hmm.
It's King David is a perfect example. He takes Bathsheba. We don't know if she wanted to be, have sex with him that night, produce a child and all that, but he was a king and she didn't have a choice. So this thing of rich men taking advantage of women is not new.
Yeah.
It's disgusting, but it's not new.
Bill, let me take a little break. When we come back, we'll chat about how the world leads versus the way Christ leads and servant leadership. It's 14 minutes after the hour. We'll be back with Bill English in just a minute. We are back. It is 17 minutes after the hour. Speaking to Bill English, founder of BibleAndBusiness.com. We're chatting about power and narcissism. Can Hollywood be honest with themselves? What about us? And how does the world lead versus the way of Christ and servant leadership, Bill?
Yeah, the world leads through power, and the world leads through selfishness, and Christ leads through servant leadership and giving of yourself to those that you're leading. It's a fundamental difference, and Christians should be known for giving, not for power and narcissism, like we were talking about in the previous segment.
Yeah. I do find that there's some people, when they reach a certain level of power, that they get to the point where they think they know a little bit of something about everything, and they're always quick to weigh in with their opinion, and it doesn't even seem to matter what the subject is. It seems that once a person gets kind of full of themselves, it's like, boy, it just never ends.
Yeah, highly talented people are usually very good in one or two core areas, and then they generalize that to every area of life, and they think they're just as good in the other areas when they're not.
Yeah, that's so true, Bill.
And it is so true, and I still see it in a lot of places. This is why small business owners and ministry leaders who are very successful in one part of their ministry or business have a hard time accepting help in other parts,
mm-hmm.
because they just don't think that they need it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really sad to see.
Yeah. When pastors are in a position of their church has grown, and I know pastors, when they say they go to conferences and they talk to other pastors, practically the very first thing they say to each other was, how big is your congregation? How big is your church? So they're already positioning themselves to say who's the biggest fish in the pond.
It's almost like two dogs sniffing each other, right? It's just an amazing thing. Some of the most power oriented places are these pastor conferences.
Yeah, and then when we talk,
have you ever been to them?
Oh yeah,
just out of curiosity.
Oh yeah, I have been.
Yeah.
You know, there's a tremendous desire to. First of all, pastors the conferences I've been to, they're desperate to be refreshed. They need their own loving on and being cared for and being ministered to, because their tanks are a little bit on the low side when they get there.
Yeah, for many of them, that's true. I think being a pastor is the most difficult vocation, if I can put it that way. I know it's calling,
mm-hmm.
but if I can put it in vocational terms, it's the most difficult vocation. To do. It's just an amazing interplay of, in one sense, no power, and in another sense, a ton of power. And it takes a lot of character to be able to manage that appropriately and to put up with the meanness of people behind mm-hmm. closed doors. This is a problem, Bill. It really is.
I know it is.
Christians get behind closed doors, and they can just become so mean and spiteful. And it's just horrible. It's not just pastors. It's lay people, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's really bad.
Don't pastors have their own self-defense mechanism and self-preservation mechanism? So they have to sort of find cover for themselves, because what you say, Bill, is so true. There is a lot of support for pastors, but there's also a lot of meanness and pettiness and backstabbing and all that.
There is, and I think where they naturally retreat to in their, as any human would, is their power base and their authority base, and, you know, I'm called by God base, and that's where they retreat to. And I think in the Christ model of servant leadership, you don't retreat there. You almost become a suffering servant, and then you just let God handle the results, which is much easier said than done.
Mm-hmm.
Having been in that position, I can tell you it's much easier.
Yeah. As a pastor, what are the two things anyone in the church could do for their pastor that would just pay off in spades?
You know, for me, it was always people who knew that I was going through something in the church and would just come up privately and say, look, not only are we praying for you, but we're going to actively support you in, you know, Method A, Method B, Method C, whatever
okay.
things are.
Yeah.
and to encourage your pastor, have them over for dinner, you know, have them, you know, don't try to be their best friend, mm-hmm. but extend to them some tangible support other than, well, I'm praying for you.
Yeah. So. I like it. All right. We got a few minutes left. I'd like to shift to a few more topics before we break today. Some cities are really putting on the dog to try to get Amazon's new headquarters.
Putting on the dog is probably the right phrase. You know, Amazon's only going to pick one.
Yeah, that's right.
They've got 50 cities or more. I know that my hometown, Maple Grove, actually submitted an application, aside from Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're going to have a lot of applications to wade through. Look, New Jersey put up $5 billion in tax incentives, and I think they're going all out on the money angle. I think that Amazon is going to look for a place where they can build, where it's a good quality of life, and where they can find the talent they need on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. I think those are going to be probably the three things that they're going to look for. They might also look for a good infrastructure, especially airlines, because they're going to have a lot of people flying in and out. You know, we have Delta here in Minneapolis, St. Paul. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know that the tax incentives alone will be the deciding factor. So
Amazon is going to, it seems like, how many years ago was buying something online kind of one of those questionable things, like, ooh, you buy stuff online? And now, is there any slowing down Amazon?
No. No, Amazon is disrupting the whole retail chain.
They are.
I really think, you know, they bought Whole Foods recently. I think you and I talked about this
a
while
back.
They bought Whole Foods recently, and the grocery store chains are shaking in their boots because they know that if Amazon can perfect their delivery system with the drones, that a person can go online and order groceries and get those groceries delivered by drone cheaper than it costs them to go to the store, and that's what they're going to do.
Yeah.
To me, Amazon's business model is just to get a whole bunch of Prime members at $12 a year, get millions and millions of those, and deliver all of the goods and services they do at cost. I don't think they're going to try and make money out of it. I think their model is to get that recurring revenue on those Prime memberships. That's mm-hmm. where I think they're going.
I think I heard about a big chain. It might have been Walmart, and they're trying to do this new experiment where the delivery boy comes over and brings you the groceries and kind of puts them away in the refrigerator and then leaves. I don't know if I want that. I don't want some coming in my
creepy.
House. I think so, too.
That's creepy.
Although,
you know, I got to tell you, when I was a kid, and I don't know if you got 30 seconds here or no.
I do.
You know, when I was a kid, Jack, the milkman, would come twice a week to our house.
Mm-hmm.
He had a key to our house. He'd let himself in. He'd put the milk and the eggs away in our refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes he'd feed the dog, and then he'd leave.
No,
Jack,
I'm
the milkman.
I remember that as well. We had a couple delivery people that literally just had freedom to come in and out of the house. But those were days where you didn't lock your front door either. You felt fairly safe in the neighborhood.
Yeah. Oh, those were the days.
Those were the days. All right,
good
Bill.
Heavens.
About a minute left. Let's talk about the Best Practices Conference. I know it's coming up soon.
It is. It's a week from today,
awesome.
October 26th at the Edinburgh Golf Course in Brooklyn Park. It's going to be a smaller, more intimate conference for business owners and business leaders who want to implement best practices. Great conference. It's something that I think if you don't come, you're going to be missing out.
Yeah.
So I would encourage people to go. I'm sorry. Go
no,
ahead.
You've got, I know one of your keynote speakers, mention him again.
Is Kyle Chank.
That's right.
He's the vice president of operations with the Super Bowl committee.
Yes.
He's going to be talking with us about what they're doing on the Super Bowl.
And with all the craziness that's going on in the NFL right now, it will make for a very interesting Super Bowl this year in the beautiful city of Minneapolis.
Can you imagine somebody kneeling at the Super Bowl? I mean, just think about that.
That's going to be interesting. I don't.
Trump will go crazy.
We'll have a lot to talk about the week following the Super Bowl, Mr. English.
Yes, we will.
Well, I'll be certainly praying for the the Best Practices Conference and your health and well-being. I know that you were a little under the weather. I missed seeing you in studio yesterday, but thanks for coming on the phone this morning.
You're welcome, and people can go to bestpracticesconference.com to learn more about the conference and to register.
That's bestpracticesconferences.com. I say that right?
No, not plural, single. bestpracticesconference.com.
So bestpracticesconferences.com, right?
You know, you're going to keep doing this, aren't you? You're just going to keep saying it wrong.
No, I'm just giving you another opportunity to say it correctly so people can hear bestconferencepracticesconferences.com. There we go. You got to say everything like three times if you want people to remember.
Yeah, you run with that, Bill.
People are so confused right now. Thanks, Bill. I'll talk to you next week.
You bet. Thanks.
Have a great day.
Care.
27 minutes after the hour, we'll take a short break, and then here's some laughs from Ken Davis on Lighten Up.
If you turn the volume up, you might be able to use the carpool lane. See, it pays to listen to the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold on Faith Radio.
Penny Lane, there is a barber showing photographs of every head he's had the pleasure to know.
Thanks, Ken Davis. I think that last little bit you did had a lot of physical comedy in it, which is a little challenging for radio, but we love you. We'll take a little break for news, then we come back. Kim Cattola from Cradle of My Heart Radio is going to be with us. Be back in a minute. It is a beautiful autumn morning, from what I can imagine or try to tell, because it's so dark out. I miss spring. I love spring in the morning. It's 6 o'clock and it's bright and sunny out. Always makes the falls, as beautiful as they are, just a little bit tougher in the morning because of the darkness. And then, of course, winter. But I'm not going to talk about that yet because that's a long, long ways away. Days and days away, for sure. It's likely you've had at least one instance of not wanting to do something that someone who has authority over you wants you to do. So Dr. Linda Mitchell shares what this looks like.
I just had this incident at work where my boss had basically said, we're going to do something this certain way. I was like, really? That is just not right. We shouldn't be doing it. And I didn't say all this out loud. But I'm thinking, this is really bad. I don't think this is the way to go. But interestingly, he wasn't asking for my opinion. And I really didn't have the authority to make the decision that he was making. So the challenge is, how do I respond to that? And I think that situation that so many of us are in so often in our employment, or even in maybe even families where somebody is in the authority position, where somebody above us is telling us this is the way it's going to go. They're not asking for your input. They're not asking you to make the decision. They're basically saying, because I think this is best. If we're honest, rebellion revs up inside of us. And a lot of times we don't handle that situation very well.
Ooh, good point, Dr. Linda. I always think she is spot on. If you want to hear that full interview, head over to myfaithradio.com and type in Dr. Linda Mintel. And Stiff Neck Authority will get you to that interview. We'll take a break, and then Kim Cattola is going to be with us with all the updates on pro-life news and issues. Be back in a minute.
We live in a feel-good society, no question, and that never works. This is Jim Garlow. If it feels good, do it. We pursue happiness like a drug. We figure it's our right as a human being. But what feels good for now may be horrible later, and that's the problem. An affair feels really good at the moment, but the consequences are catastrophic. They carry a lifetime of regret. On the other hand, what might feel crummy right now, self-discipline or diet or rest or doing something to achieve a goal, feels great later on. Eating that dessert, great for now, not so good when you step on the scale. Going to church, going to school, studying hard, there may not be a lot of fun things about that, but the rewards are great. Obedience to God and His Word might be tough at times, even difficult, but the rewards, you can't beat it. If it feels good, do it. Mm-mm. So how's that working for you? This is Jim Garlow.
Love, in need of love today.
Good morning, everyone. So glad you're with us today. I'm Kim Cattola, with us already on our studio line from Cradle My Heart Radio. Kim, there's that big chunk of good news this morning I want to open with.
Hey, Bill, hey.
Hey. There's some such... I can't even spit this out. I'm so excited. This is startling breakthrough news. Would you like to tell our listening audience what it is?
I'm not exactly sure which one.
All right.
I mean, we've got a lot of stories on
the
menu. I
know we do. But the Department of Health and Human Services now says that life begins at conception. The claim appears five times in the draft of its strategy plans for 2018 to 2022. This was not even seen in the last Bush administration.
It is really great news, and especially because it brings policy in line with science. The science is non-controversial at this point that life begins at conception. Bill, there are over 20 embryology textbooks that state so, that there is a distinct living whole human being from conception forward. And so the Department of Health and Human Services has drafted language that says that they have a dedication to serve all Americans from conception to natural death, but especially those individuals and populations facing or at high risk for economic and social well-being challenges through effective human services. So that's one of their strategic goals in what their mandate is, to advance health and human services for us as Americans. It's a 65-page draft, but life at conception replaces very vague language that was there under the Obama administration, and it is. It's a big breakthrough, and you're right, Bill, it's very good news.
It is. I'll read a Ted Cruz tweet. He said, "Each life is a gift from God. Encouraged to see health and human services recognize that life begins at conception."
And, of course, all the usual suspects are not happy.
Oh, yeah.
This is not good news for Mara Gandel-Powers, who's the senior counsel at the National Women's Law Center. She says, "This language doesn't have legal force." What in the world? Sorry.
That's all right. I like it. That's good.
I try to be respectful, but...
No.
Others have declared that this discriminates and urge people to leave negative comments because this is open for people, any opinion, to leave a comment until October 27th on the HHS page outlining this draft for their strategic plan. HHS.gov has the link for you where you can share your thoughts. And, you know, I think everybody should. If you believe, as science teaches us, that life begins at conception, I think you ought to leave your thoughts. I mean, our ministry is not primarily political, Bill, but do we have an obligation to stand with truth? This isn't about politics. This is about whether or not we want our government to protect the youngest members of the human family. And we can do that while helping women who are in difficult pregnancy circumstances. You know, people like this woman that we've quoted, this Mara Gandel-Powers, have a focus on helping women who are pregnant in difficult circumstances. And, you know, everyone applauds that. That's wonderful. But we can't do that at the expense of human life and at the expense of the lives of their children. So, yeah, this is a great, great first step.
Yeah, Kim, how will the opposition parse this? Will they say, all right, well, life begins, but it's not viable?
So it's right. Not... So they're right. They'll revert to the legal language in Roe versus Wade that abortion should be legal until viability, which is about now 22 weeks. I mean, at the time that was written in 1973, neonatal advances weren't there for the youngest born children to survive. So that's a moving line. But viability, now we have to shift, Bill, from science to philosophy. What is our guiding principle in life? What makes human life valuable? And viability cannot be our standard. We have to say that either all human beings have equal value by virtue of our shared human nature, or there's no such thing as equal rights at all. If there's some arbitrary circumstance about, you know, where you are in your development as a human being that suddenly confers value on you, then really we're looking at individuals determining when humans are valuable versus saying that everybody is valuable from conception forward.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the basis for equal human rights. And it really does become a justice issue when it's framed in that way, which goes back again to the science that we are all distinct, living, and whole human beings from conception forward.
Mm-hmm. Kim, have you heard about this story of this woman from Central America who has illegally come into our country, is pregnant now, and is demanding taxpayers provide an abortion for her?
Well, she's 17 years old, which mm-hmm. makes her a minor.
Mm-hmm.
And so HHS is actually taking care of her. This is where the rubber meets the road on this policy, right? So she's under the care of Health and Human Services right now. She desires an abortion. But there are people who are saying that would place the government, the U.S. government, in the role of, first of all, acting as a parent to this young woman. And it would, again, force our government to pay for an abortion when that violates the conscience of the people who have contributed the taxes to the government being able to do so. So there are a lot of questions that this case is bringing into very sharp focus. HHS is, as I understand it, working to try to connect this young woman with her parents. I'm not sure even, I think she crossed at the Mexico border. I'm not sure if she's a Mexican citizen or not, but yeah, it's actually forcing a lot of the issues surrounding legal abortion into very sharp focus, and also issues surrounding immigration and what obligation we have for those who are here without, who aren't here legally. What obligation does the U.S. government have to provide health care?
Mm-hmm.
And is abortion even health care? It raises just a lot of very, very difficult questions.
It seems a little bit like Roe v. Wade 2.0. It's like we're going to go international with it now and talk about illegal people coming into the country who are now demanding abortions.
Well, and, Bill, I understand that people are, we don't want to say illegal aliens. We don't want to call people illegal. There's no such thing as being illegal. But you can be in a country illegally. And I want you to know, for example, I once had a car accident in Mexico, Bill. Never drive your own vehicle into Mexico. It's a lesson we all learned. And as a result, we were in Mexico when our visas had expired. I want you to know that there were very few Mexicans coming to my defense and the people that I was traveling with to help us navigate what we needed to do to be allowed to leave Mexico at that point. These laws are in place all over the world as sovereign nations have a right to determine who comes and goes and how. I know that that's kind of a radical statement that people would say, some people would say that that's not Christ-like. But it is indeed a matter of law and fact that we have rules for how people can enter. And there are rules and laws as to what the obligation of a government is once a person is here.
Yeah, if I couldn't just go try to play golf at Augusta National, they would call me illegal.
You'd probably get mopped up by the course.
Yes,
too, Bill.
I
I'm
would. That would eat me alive. All right, 13 minutes until the top of the hour. Kim Cattola is with me. I'll take a short break and we'll be back in just a minute. Thank you for being with us today. It's 10 minutes until the top of the hour. Speaking to Kim Cattola from Cradle My Heart Radio. Kim, I'd like to start with a very profound statement that I would like to take credit for, but I can't because Rebecca Maxwell wrote this. She said to me, irony, they're saying a minor, this 17-year-old girl, who came into the country illegally, they're saying a minor has the right to reside in a country illegally and be protected by its government, while an innocent baby has no right to even exist or be protected in the womb he or she was placed in by God.
That pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, nice job,
Rebecca. And it really challenges our hearts as bystanders. Bill, I thank God once more for the chance to proclaim the redemption in Jesus Christ that I have for having had an abortion. Praise the Lord That is what has allowed me to give voice to God's love to everyone who wonders how in the world we should be wise about these terrible circumstances, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially a situation like this. But our solution can never drive us to saying killing someone is the answer to our problems. There is not a circumstance in which we can see our Lord saying, yep, you should get rid of it. That would be the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that's not his heart. And will she have a difficult road if she has to have this children now, you know, being thousands of miles from her home, separated from parents and those who should be supporting her and standing by her in this circumstance? It's horrible. We wouldn't wish this on anyone. But I'm telling you, I'm here to tell you, we do not want to burden a young woman with abortion, which is something that she will carry for her the rest of her life. I mean, even if she is not allowed to get an abortion, she gives birth to this child and has no means or no will to parent this child, there is someone who wants that child. And there is someone who will raise that child and love that child and give that child a meaningful life. And she won't have to live the rest of her days knowing that she did something that can't ever be undone. This is what's at the heart of the matter, and this is what has to drive our decisions for us as to how we should, you know, participate in these decisions. It's a teachable moment for every one of us, and it helps us to be able to express our trust and faith in God and our willingness to step up and be part of the solution and offer support to women in dire circumstances.
Yeah.
Or women in confused circumstances, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
But Rebecca's right. The right to be born has to trump all of these other rights that have been secured through the legal systems.
Kim, how about the mother-baby reunion party in heaven? How cool will that be?
Oh, my goodness. That makes me smile.
Me too.
That makes me smile because, yes, our Lord, you know, Jesus, when he was walking this earth, Bill, said, "Let the little children come to me."
Mm-hmm.
I have complete faith in his character to receive those little ones back to himself, and that nothing for us who have aborted is irretrievably lost. As Pope John Paul said, you know, nothing is irretrievably lost in God's love. And for us who know the Lord and who look forward to being with him in eternity, and who've suffered abortion, we have that hope as well.
Mm-hmm. Kim, let's talk about the abortion provider in Bethesda. They've gone into Bethesda, and the protesters are saying, we're not going to stop until they leave.
Well, you know, we talked about this a couple weeks ago.
I know.
Carhartt is the provider.
Mm-hmm.
He was a contractor in a clinic. Some activists there and people of conscience said, not in my backyard. $1 million was raised to buy out the facility, and they did. And it's whack-a-mole because he's now got his own practice that's opened up across town. And so people are showing up with signs, and they're saying, not in my backyard either.
Mm-hmm.
And it raises a question, you know, what is the right strategy? Was that $1 million the best use of limited pro-life resources? You know, do we want to be symbolic or strategic? The laws in Maryland allow him to perform abortions up until the moment of natural birth, Bill, all through all 9 months of pregnancy. The laws in Maryland allow that. So what do we do if it is in our backyard? I don't think we can do nothing. But, wow, it is a real challenge for those people who are now out there, as I say, raising signs, denouncing his new abortion business. An anti-abortion activist, Missy Smith, said this is war, and that's why she's out there. Carhartt operates also a practice in Nebraska. One of the tactics they're deploying, Bill, is showing up at the airport every time he flies in from Nebraska to harass him. You know, what does wisdom say we must do? And I can tell you that we have God's guidance in the Proverbs that says, you know, rescue those being led away to the slaughter. And if you say we did not know it, does not he who guards your heart know that you knew it? Right. So that tells me God says he's going to take care of us when we rescue those being led away to the slaughter. But wow, we have to really be sure that we're in prayer and following God's direction as we do that.
Yeah, flying commercial airlines is harassment enough. Let alone get harassed when you get off the plane. Give me a break. I don't fly commercial anymore. I'm sure you don't either. Private jets.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. A nice thing for those who can
afford. I know. Kim, let's just mention that we are going to have a Senate vote on the 20-week abortion ban. We don't know when, but that will be interesting.
This is something we all need to be praying about too, Bill, because the Senate is the place where this is going to happen or not happen. It was passed in the House earlier this month, a pretty healthy margin. We need 60 votes in the Senate to protect children at the age of 20 weeks gestation. About 1.5% of all abortions that happen every year are on these children who are viable, as you said. You know, it's 15,000 of the 1 million who are aborted every year.
Mm-hmm.
And the Senate, they need 60 votes. There are 52 Republicans. There's only one Democrat who has less than a 100% rating from NARAL, Bill.
Wow.
So we've got to pray that those who have that lobbying power in the Senate will do all that they can to get those 8 votes. And that would be reflecting the will of the people they represent. 80% of people are against abortion after 20 weeks.
We will pray indeed. Kim, thanks so much for being on the program. I will talk to you next week.
Thank you, Bill.
You bet. You bet. A couple minutes until the top of the hour. I'll be back in a minute. Thank you, Bill English. And thank you, Kim Cotola. That wraps up Hour 1. We've got a great Hour 2 coming up with Dr. Bruce Ashford and Mitch Glazer. Be back in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.